thank you for hanging out with us during right before cocktail hour or whatever it is we do. I don't know if I can mention that to this group because I'm sure you're all healthier than I am. Thank you for coming to this session. I want to thank all of my co-authors and tell you that I was the default option for presenting today. Because of the government situation, a lot of folks were prohibited from traveling here and had other conflicts that came up and so forth. Our lead presenter, Dr. Ritchie, who's also a colonel and psychiatrist, is used to dealing a lot with complementary and alternative practices, so a lot of her knowledge is embedded in this presentation. Captain Anita Hickey and Commander Sejal Larson are actually the anesthesiologists and the holistic practitioners who deal with integrative medicine in the United States Navy, who's a collaborator. And then Dr. Lipov is an anesthesiologist who deals principally with stellate ganglion block, and I'll share that. So I'm just going to highlight all of their knowledge for you today. I'm actually, and our team from Advanced Health Solutions, I'm the CEO and president, really work in support with all of these different constituents from the DC Mental Health Department to Navy, Army, et cetera, as the support research arm. So I'm not the one that actually, if you ask me what meridian, you know, I should put this thing in, I will say, like, right here on my forehead, because I don't know the answer. So I'll do my best to share with you guys, okay? But the rest of it, the research part I can talk to you about and the statistics and my training, I'm a health economist and a clinical epidemiologist, so that I can talk to, but all this other fancy stuff, I'll do my best. They've taught me a lot, so I'll go from there. So that's my disclosure. Okay, so post-traumatic stress disorder, I'm sure you've all heard about it by now. We hear about it almost daily in the news. It's a very prevalent condition. Estimated lifetime, 7% in the United States population as a large. See, there's epidemiology. I feel comfortable with that. 10 to 20% among active duty service members across the branches, and 35 to 40% amongst our veterans. Current evidence-based PTSD therapies, many have been successful. The challenge we have is they have limited reach and impact. And some of the primary reasons we have that we see this less than grand effect that we would all like are for a variety of reasons, such as stigma in seeking mental health therapies, transient mobility, especially among our active duty service members, where we often have deployment issues and so forth, high rates of co-occurring medical and psychosocial conditions. I was sharing a session on veterans health just before this one, and we were talking about comorbid alcoholism and substance abuse, which is very prevalent with PTSD, which makes the treatment very challenging, and also adhering to it in terms of our EBM therapies. Traditional side effects, of course, patient preferences. Often these therapies are long-term, they're repeated over time, you have to come X number of weeks, and when you have PTSD and you just want to isolate yourself and you have hypervigilance, it's very counter to what the modality requires you to do to achieve the level of success. And also there's various perverse incentives between military and veterans. Often we have our active duty service members that'll tell us, you know, I don't have PTSD, I don't have this challenge, because they can get discharged, lose clearances, etc. And so it's quite challenging in treating them for a variety of these reasons, and often a combination of these. Overall, subsequently, evidence-based treatments are about less than 30% effective across the populations who need them. So what has resulted is that a lot of practitioners, and you see here now my complement of co-authors from psychiatrists to acupuncture and integrative medicine physicians to anesthesiologists who deal with pain and pain treatment modalities have all come together and started thinking about novel ways of treating, because the current system we have, 70% of people aren't being treated well. We're not doing a good enough job. So objectives of this study is kind of to talk about a conglomerate of all of this together in terms of what is the expanding evidence base for specific condition of post-traumatic stress disorder in terms of alternative and complementary health practices, and what's worked, what shows promise, where do we have more evidence, where do we have less, and need to build on that, and so forth. And then that's our first objective. The second is there's this very nice, innovative, and it's actually gotten a lot of buzz in the last 5 years or so. I'll talk to you about that a little bit, which is stellate ganglion block, and it's a procedure that's the first biological treatment for PTSD that has showed some initial promise now, and it's actually an RCT is being conducted by Navy Medicine. So hopefully that will be out by early next year. I'm presenting actually with my Navy colleagues at AMCES just 2 days from now about some of the preliminary results of that randomized controlled trial. And that I'll share you, with you the highlights here today, and then discuss what are some of the future directions taking all of these together for this condition, PTSD. So in terms of commonly used alternative health practices for PTSD, typically what we hear about is virtual reality and its various nuances and differences, acupuncture, animal-assisted therapy, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy and meditation, and then stellate ganglion block, or SGB, which has been recent in the last 5 years in terms of growing in different health settings, and I'll show you what some of that preliminary case series looks like. So, virtual reality. Okay, so we have visualization, manipulation, and interaction with complex and computer data. It simulates the naturalistic environment where certain traumas are happening, which are really the trigger points and stimuli, within a certain context. And we have it here. I haven't read anything yet on the success of virtual reality in children with abuse, like sexual assault or others. I haven't read that yet. But I know in adults that it's showing quite a bit of practice, promise, specifically in virtual reality exposure therapy, which we've had the greatest number of what we would call growing evidence towards it, so it's not just one or two case series. And that's quite promising. So virtual reality, a systematic review was actually done of VRET, and these studies have shown specifically focus on veterans because it's easier to get them to actually even agree and be willing to be diagnosed with PTSD, again, because of some of those perverse incentives that we talked about. And the four randomized trials have all shown that this is that virtual reality can really help reduce the symptomology that's associated with PTSD. Unfortunately, like all studies, especially with this condition and so forth, attrition has been a problem, and also some additional factors that have contributed to bias. So what we know is, to date, of all the different virtual reality modalities, this has been the most successful with the randomized trials in prestigious journal with quality researchers that have done it. But we still have more robust ways of studying it, especially in subpopulations of individuals with PTSD. But that's one promising modality. And next, we heard a little bit about from other colleagues here using broadly for migraine. And I believe Sharon's going to talk a little bit about it as well. For PTSD in particular, there has been a lot more studies that have come out, whether it's in battlefield-related acupuncture, whether it's for different types of chronic and acute pain management and so forth. And what we've seen so far is that it really does help relieve pain. There is, as our moderator mentioned, a maintenance schedule that needs to happen. None of these modalities, even virtual reality, although it's the data shows it's much longer in its duration, are not a magic bullet. You had it, you do virtual reality for 5, 6, 7 sessions, and now it's gone. PTSD is complex, as you may know. It has multiple different symptom clusters, and some of those clusters are reduced by some of these modalities versus others. So not all of these modalities will work for all of the different symptom clusters of PTSD. But we do know that they're showing promise in acupuncture. Often, one of the comorbidities as well, which acupuncture helps a lot, as I've learned in receiving it myself just to test and see how this works and whether it hurts or not, because I wanted to know with all these needles in me. Also, I've studied energy medicine, so I had a lot of interest in just kind of feeling a difference in the meridians and so forth. And with pain in particular, we've had the most success. If you have PTSD, the majority of whom have some degree of pain, in relieving the pain, which then allows you to even do a lot of adjunctive treatments, combination treatments, because you're helping with reducing one element that then helps you be able to treat the other dimensions of the patient in a more naturalistic, rather than, you know, the 50 pills that they pop and it doesn't help them at all, and you end up with more side effects, which is challenging. So acupuncture is another alternative that seems to be very promising for PTSD. And we do actually have one randomized controlled trial in that was published and they're working on a second for acupuncture. The challenge I understand from my colleagues who do acupuncture therapy and PTSD in particular is that the sham or placebo and getting it so that you really, because anything that's injection therapy, we have such a high rate of placebo effect, and how do you navigate that? And so there are different, and we have actually an article that will be coming out, different ways of trying to reduce that potential placebo effect given that there are needles involved. Next is animal-assisted therapies for PTSD. So typically it's with service dogs or horses they use with equine-assisted therapies, and this has been done in PTSD in combination with traumatic brain injury, and really it's a way of reducing the isolation and getting the emotional engagement back in the patient and giving them that level of support without it necessarily being a human that represents whatever has typically been the trigger or the trauma inducer, because it's rarely a horse that's caused you to have that trauma or an animal or dog. So it just really seems to have very impressive effects. I was at the Navy and saw some of this actually along with other DOD colleagues, and I think furry, cute, adorable, nice, but the effect that you see in them, very impressive, I have to say. So from a biological perspective, what my colleagues have said is that it helps increase endogenous levels of oxytocin and this desired effect, and it just is that bonding effect. Apparently, mother, just like maternal child health, we see that a lot as well. With animal-assisted therapies, in terms of this is a service member actually, and these studies have really shown specific outcome metrics. So if we wanted to look at it, this isn't just quote-unquote fluffy things that those who don't believe in alternative and complementary medicine and integrative ways of approaching healthcare in a more holistic and complementary fashion will say, well, what are your outcomes? Well, we've actually have these in measured, quantifiable results, which is increasing the patients, the impulse control and emotional regulation, which is often a challenge in PTSD, improving the ability to display affect and emotion, improved sleep, insomnia is a huge issue in PTSD, and that, of course, triggers all sorts of other challenges. Decreasing depression, decreasing the hypervigilance that is one of the hallmark conditions and symptoms with PTSD, increasing a sense of belonging, improved family and social dynamics, and then overall the reduction of stress and this sense of calm and this noise in their head that I've heard numerous patients describe that just doesn't go away. And they say, Dr. Mai, this doesn't go away, and it actually does go away and becomes really reduced. It's quite impressive. So this is a growing body of literature. We don't have the level of randomized controlled trials that we do with virtual therapy. They're working on it actually at the DOD and with some other academic colleagues and so forth. But so far, and it doesn't, people say, well, does it matter if it's the horse or if it's the cat or if it's the dog? No, it's that emotional experience and bonding. The animal doesn't seem to be a differentiating point, but I think they've typically used animals that can, I think, be trained. Is my understanding. I have not engaged in this, but this is what an area of therapy that's certainly impressive for us to continue investigating. Another is mindfulness-based cognitive therapy for PTSD. And again, this focuses on the emotional expression and containment, calm, and being able to just react differently to the various stimuli that trigger you to remember the adverse event or trauma. And we have not had for this particular degree of evidence, we really don't have it. It's much more individual and case based, and it's also just very anecdotal. You can speak with each of the individual cases, and but there's no theme that we're seeing that says, why is it working, how is it working, beyond knowing that it's helping mitigate anxiety and inability to regulate emotions. But it's certainly something that would be very valuable, I think, to study in terms of next potential therapies, and also even adjunctive to other treatment options, because they can do it by themselves and they don't have to be in with a practitioner. The final that I wanted to share with you is stellate ganglion block. Now, SGB is actually has over a 60-year of safety and efficacy in terms of anesthesia and so forth for upper extremity pain management. It involves a very fine, small needle like you have in acupuncture. In the lower part of the neck, C6 and C7, a trained anesthesiologist and pain specialist has to do this because obviously I couldn't go and put a needle in. I don't have that type of clinical training. And since 2008, this SGB has now been emerging in the literature in different settings as a very rapid a response that we're seeing in terms of symptom reduction for PTSD. And this has now been shown in multiple settings in Army, in Navy, in the civilian population, and among veterans. We have currently in excess of 120 cases in the literature that describe this that we know, and 83 of them are in one particular practice, which is Dr. Lipoff, who's one of our co-author out of Chicago area. He's the one that actually found this in his accidentally by treating pain in a patient who had a comorbid condition. He describes this in the literature. I'll be happy to provide that, and the references are here for you to pull. And this, it's very interesting. I've actually seen the stellate ganglion block perform. It is a 5 to 10 minute procedure. They go in, they put in the anesthetic, and literally when we've done these PCLM and CAPS assessments, within 30 minutes or less after treatment, we are seeing this huge improvement. And some of the patients will have, need on average about 2 treatments, 3 months or so apart. And we have some that we followed now, 30, 40 patients collectively, in excess of 3 years. And their PTSD symptoms, I mean, have almost completely gone. And now we're in wanting to know whether this is a sustained placebo effect. Is it a real effect? What is going on? So right now, a randomized controlled trial is being done only amongst active duty service members by the Department of Defense. So it's not available for the civilian population or veterans. But it's something that we are trying to get funding for in order to actually study it. It's quite impressive, and it's because it's 1 or 2 shots, and it's a more passive approach in the sense that the patient doesn't have to actively come in for these treatment options, et cetera. It's quite promising, and we're all very excited about it. But taken all together now with all this stimulating research going on and positive results that we've seen so far, we do still need more rigorous research that's conducted to really look at the efficacy of these modalities, comparative effectiveness, what are some of the mechanisms of action by which these modalities work, optimal dosing, for example, for stellate ganglion block. That's very important because we don't know the frequency when we talk about a maintenance regimen. We don't know what that would be so far. And although it's, again, very promising, I think we need to keep in mind that in order to change policy and payers and just everything we do in public health and medicine, that we really have to continue building the evidence base in a way that can demonstrate for who does it work, when does it work, whatever the modality or it is. And often I have found in working in medicine and public health now for about 27 years of my professional life that it's not one event, it's a combination of us working together and coordinating. And so I'm hopeful that even if we don't find the magic bullet, that maybe if we have some type of cognitive therapy plus stellate ganglion block or mindfulness plus, you know, something else, that we'll get a lot more than the 30% effective rate that we have today. That's it. Thank you.